a major league team in a major league city. The new crew.
This is to us. This is to Columbus. This is what this is all about. Unity, Columbus, history, the future, the new era, the new crew. Let's get weird. Let's get weird. Let's get weird. And it's all because you guys like to drink beer.
Live from Awesome Town, Ohio, you are listening to the Massive Report Podcast, your complete source of news and information for your Awesome Town crew.
And good afternoon, and welcome to another edition of the Massive Report, recording this time on a Sunday. Not that most of you care, because most of you will be listening to this on a different day that's not Sunday. Welcome to the show. We are brought to you by Land Grant Brewing. Greg apparently is very upset with his microphone and decided to punch it.
I did.
Right at the beginning of the show. Molly is hitting the buttons for us. Thank you very much for that, because Sam apparently wants to watch people play golf all day.
The microphone looked at me funny.
Yeah, Justin's here, Alex is here, and Morgan's here. Gentlemen, another week, another couple of losses for Columbus Crew SC. Team looking like they're in a bit of a tailspin. I'm going to start with you, Alex, because if I start with Morgan, he's going to be dumb. So what's going on with this club?
Like you said, I mean, they're in a bit of a slump. I don't really know. It's weird. I still don't know if this is something that we should be seriously concerned about or whether this is kind of our normal summer slump that we seem to do. We did last year, at least.
Mm-hmm.
We had a tougher time, I think, last year than we've had so far this year. And we still managed to turn that around and make the playoffs. I do think it's a little bit sad that we're in the situation now where we're talking about, well, we'll still make the playoffs, I'm assuming, instead of talking about, you know, oh, maybe we'll win the East or something like that. But all things considered, I don't think it's time to start yelling, the sky is falling.
Because if you read the internet, that's the exact opposite of what most people are thinking at this point.
Yeah, unfortunately. Crew Twitter and Crew Facebook is in fine form, as always. But I think realistically...
We eat our own.
Yeah, realistically, the Grana loss has hurt us. Not having Trap has still hurt us. Having to rotate players... really hurt us this week a lot. We didn't have a full-strength squad any of the days we played, for the most part. It was a lot of kind of half-squads or, you know, that sort of thing. Not having Pogatetz at the Montreal game, I think, hurt. And I think we missed Grana in that game as well. My hope is that when we get to regular games again, we'll start seeing the full-strength squad that we have now. And I hope that when the window opens, we will reinforce at right back. And if Trap is still having problems, maybe reinforce in the midfield as well. Because the team as it stands right now is not playing good enough. I think that the squad is good enough, but they're not playing to their potential. And something needs to change. Berhalter said that stuff needs to change, and he's going to work on it. And he kind of fell on his sword a little bit after this game and said it's my fault. I hope they can turn it around because, it's not fun right now.
Justin, your thoughts?
That was very nice, Alex.
Thanks.
Look, this, I feel like I've been kind of... People have told me that I've been a little down, I guess, over the last few weeks. Look, I don't think this team's very good. I think it's made up of good players. I just don't think they play like a team. I don't think there's been a couple instances in the season where they've played fully, like 1-3-11, like a team. Seattle comes to mind. The first Philadelphia game comes to mind, where they seem to be getting on the same page, and just recently they are not on the same page. It's very clear. I don't think Will Trapp is the answer. Anyone who says, like, this is why we need Will Trapp is completely losing their... They have no idea what's happening. Will Trapp is a kid.
Mm-hmm.
As good as he is, as important as he is to this team, as much praise as Thierry Henry can laud on this young man, he's a kid. and he plays a position that is not exactly the most creative position on the field. It's a position that needs to have responsibility, and Will Trapp is very good at that because of very limited. He's challenged with a very limited task, and that's hold the middle of the field, defend, sweep, distribute from the back. He's not going to be up there making creative passes, creative plays. So when he comes on, he's going to basically do exactly what Mohamed Saeed does, except maybe be a little slower. Mm-hmm. That's not going to make much of a difference. What this team needs is finishing in the final third. What this team needs is better defending. This is going to sound like undue hate, but Tyson Wahl is not a player who starts on a team that is good. He's not a player that starts on a team that makes the playoffs and goes deep in the playoffs. He's not. I think Tyson Wahl is a fine Major League Soccer player. Take that as an insult if you want. It's not meant as that. I think he's a serviceable player who will fill in when necessary. He's not a starter. And the reason for that is when you watch this team play, it cannot keep its shape when it has players like Tyson Wahl. They cannot play cohesive soccer when you have players who are a step behind or a step too fast. Watch a team that New England. New England does this very well. They are on the same page. Mm-hmm. I think the Crew, when they play very well, as they have for the last couple years, it's because they have players who know what their role is, what their teammates' roles are, how to play together. And they don't have to compensate for players who are slow or not in the right spot. Tyson Wahl is always a step behind. He is always a step behind. And as much as we want to blame Michael Parkhurst, I don't think is having the greatest year of his career. There's no question about that. But what he has to do is he has to kind of make up for that. And you can look, I don't think anyone on this team is ever going to single out a player and say, we're having to compensate for this player's lack or this player's inability to be in a certain spot. They're never going to say that. In fact, Greg Berhalter is probably going to say, in an effort to encourage players to be better, he's probably going to give them, he just seems to be that kind of person, where he's going to be positive and say, like, you know, they're doing well. And Greg Berhalter is also a kind of person who I think is going to, like you said, fall on his sword. But I think that they recognize that this is not a team that's ready. And, you know, a few weeks ago I said that, look, Chicago's better than everyone says that they are. Philadelphia, while they're not great, they can play soccer when they're on the same page. Yeah. And Montreal, when they were dead last in the league, I said, this is a better team than everyone thinks. Toronto is passing us. Right now we're still in a position for playoffs, but we're barely in that position. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to tell you, they got to get this together. We do not have the luxury of having weeks to stink, to not get results, and still make the playoffs like we did last year, because these teams are much, much better than we think. And we're gonna get past very, very quickly unless they get this figured out. And I think from what I've seen, not just from fans, but from the team over the last 24 hours, they recognize it.
Yeah.
And it's going to go one way or the other. We can talk about how I feel about that later, but that's there.
Four,
you go.
4-4-4 when we started the week. 4-6-4 now. Morgan, I'm going to go to you. Philadelphia. What went wrong?
Yeah. I tweeted right when that the lineup came out prior to the Philly game, and I said, oh my God, Greg, no, this is not a U.S. Open Cup game. Somebody tell him, Jesus Christ, somebody tell him. And I think that was pretty much it. Look, coming out of the Seattle week, I said here on the show, we have 5 weeks or 5 games here where we can distance ourselves from our competition. It was San Jose, Chicago, Orlando, Philadelphia, and Montreal. And I apologize because I'm sick and I sound like ass. But from those,
well, you look like it too, buddy.
You're a bastard. those 5 games, which all games you go into hoping, expecting 3 points, in those 5 games, we got 2 points. We got tied Orlando, we tied home against Chicago, and we lost the rest of them. That's a stretch that playoff teams don't go through against crap teams.
This was supposed to be one of the easier parts of the schedule.
Yeah.
Like on paper.
Points. And now we're looking at a stretch of 3 against LA, RSL, and New England.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. We'll see what happens, but those are better teams.
Greg, your thoughts on Philly and Montreal. Right.
This season has been such an anomaly, and the last five games have been emblematic of that. Philly was, as Morgan said, when the lineup was announced, I said, look, I understand that it's a midweek game. You got two, you know, basically three games in 8 days. And some of these guys, you need to rest them for upcoming games. But at the same time, these guys are pro soccer players.
Yeah.
They're supposed to be able to put in the best part of 90 minutes, if not the whole thing. Wednesday night against Philly really felt like Berhalter and co. were mailing it in. And with the lineup choices, with the way that they played the game, the entire game just felt like we're going to treat this as a throwaway, like it was the second leg of a playoff where we'd already won the first one 6-0.
Yeah.
Like they really, there was no effort. Saturday felt like very similar to what we've seen the last five games. It's been unable to finish, unable to create that final chance to put the ball in the back of the net, and getting burned on a counter.
Mm-hmm.
It's happened time and time and time again. It's, you know, over the course of the last all of the last five games, at least one counter has led to a goal against.
Yeah.
And you can look at the defensive line, you can look at the wing backs, you can look at any player in any particular position, but there's been some questionable decisions lineup-wise and tactics-wise that make me wonder if Berhalter isn't really treating this period as kind of an experimental phase with, hey, let's see what works. Unfortunately, this isn't preseason. This isn't experimental time. This is when you go with what you know works.
Yeah. But do we know what works?
No, right now it's not working. That's it.
I think that's one of the issues, though. Is like, I think, look, we were talking about, from the very beginning, before the season started, about the depth of this team, and it was sort of like this understanding that it was all just going to fit into place. I think that became, again, like I talked about a couple weeks ago, the narrative, that's what people do when they're lazy. When they're lazy reporters, or when they're lazy, they're talking about something. He's like, oh, there's a narrative, and this is going to fit into that. That was a narrative that was basically sold to the fan base.
Mm-hmm.
I don't believe that Greg Berhalter thought that way. I don't think that the team thought that way until it started to kind of coalesce around, this is how reality is. And it was never real.
Yeah.
I mean, there was a really good example. You were talking about getting burned on the counter. About the 36th, 37th minute of the game, there was a moment where Tyson Wall got pulled up into our attacking half. It was Wall and Chani were fighting for a ball. McNamara won the ball. It was 2v1, and he basically won the ball. The ball was loose, and Montreal counterattacked. Ended up with Michael Perkhurst having to sprint back to barely getting in the way of, I think it was Piatti.
Yeah.
And Montreal should have been up. They should have been up at that point. What happened was Steve Clark makes an amazing save,
mm-hmm.
basically by just holding his ground and not flinching. And everyone clapped, like, oh, what a great play that was. It was a terrible play.
Yeah.
It was terrible team soccer all the way around by the Columbus crew. Yet everyone's like, hey, there goes Steve. Steve says no.
Yeah.
Well, okay, that's great. That's great. There's your narrative right there.
Exactly.
But what's reality? What is the reality of the situation? I think it's something that Greg Berhalter's trying to make. He's trying to make this work. And so here's the next narrative is, well, Greg Berhalter doesn't know how to make this work. Nonsense.
Yeah.
This is a team that is just simply not an elite team. We want it to be. It makes sense that it is. We have all these people who write for MLS soccer saying, you know, the Columbus crew are really great. They play really great soccer. Okay, sure.
Show me. Yeah, no, exactly.
I think, I disagree a little bit on the depth issue. I think that we do have depth. I think that the depth that we were talking about in the preseason and in the early part of the season, we're having issues with now because we've lost Trapp for God knows how long, so there goes our midfield depth because now our backup is having to start every single game.
Mm-hmm.
And losing Hernan Grana means that our backup, Jimenez, is having to start every game. And I really don't think Jimenez is suited for that position in this system.
Yeah.
I remember one time in the first half, I can't remember what minute it was, but Jimenez bombed forward, and they got behind him, and we really didn't have an answer to it. I think Waylon Francis had to run all the way over from the left hand side to cover and clear the ball out for a corner kick and get in the way of him in the shot. So this team is disjointed now. I hope that they'll sort it out in the transfer window, but we'll have to see.
But isn't that what depth is, though? Like, isn't that what? So you have depth in order to have a backup.
Yeah.
If something goes wrong.
Yeah,
I think if you're
playing one game with Grana out for Jimenez, but Trapp is in the midfield, I think that affects you less than if you're playing every game with Jimenez and Trapp out. Mm. Or if Grana's in there, but Trapp is out and Saeed is in there, I think the team is able to cope more. I think the fact that all of these things are happening all at once and that they're having to do every single thing for every game, I think that's the problem.
All right, we're going to talk about this a little bit more when we come back from break. We're also going to be talking Women's World Cup. That's going on. We are taking a break, actually, because there is a press conference that's going to be going on in a few minutes here for the U.S. women's team. We don't know what's happening. It's an unscheduled press conference that just got called about an hour ago. So we're going to take a break, find out what it is, and then react to it in a few minutes because the USA plays Austria tomorrow, and we want to know what's going on. That's the same country, right?
Totally.
Yeah, Austria. USA versus Austria. That's tomorrow. Australia, sorry.
Right.
We'll be back in a minute. It's the Massive Report, and it's brought to you by Land Grant Brewing. Stick around.
This edition of the Massive Report podcast is brought to you, as always, by Land Grant Brewing Company. Land Grant Brewing Company is a local business, which is located down in Franklinton and is owned by multiple humans who employ multiple other humans. This group, or team, of humans come together every morning and work side by side throughout the day to produce delicious alcohol, which is then served to you, the paying customer, in medium-sized glass containers. But Morgan, you say, I don't like medium-sized glass containers which are filled to the brim with delicious intoxicating alcohol because I don't drink. Well, I'm sorry to hear that, friend. Your life truly sounds empty and meaningless. Why not try reading a book, or learning math, or whatever it is that you stupid nerds do while the rest of us are busy having friends, being ridiculously good-looking, and generally crushing it down at Land Grant Brewing Company. So head on down tonight, grab a cold one, and tell them your friends over at the Massive Report podcast sent ya.
And we're back. It is segment two of the Massive Report. Much ado about nothing in that press conference. Just watched it. Kind of wish I could have that 19 minutes of my life back. Apparently, the U.S. Women's National Team is psyched for the game tomorrow. They don't really care about the article that came out about Hope Solo. And they're playing Australia. That's what I learned.
Which is not Austria.
Are you sure?
I'm 100% positive.
Okay. Yep. I still don't trust you on that.
Emmanuel Pogatetz is not from Australia.
Go ahead, Alex.
False.
Well, I think it is interesting that they're standing behind her in spite of this. I think that the timing of that article that was released today by ESPN was interesting, I guess you could say, given the fact that they lost the World Cup rights and then decided to drop the police reports 24 hours before our first game. But, yeah, me and a lot of people on Twitter were kind of really interested in what that press conference would have, but it looks like they're fully standing behind her. It sounds like she's going to start, mm-hmm. Despite all this stuff. It'll be very interesting to see how she plays.
I'm psyched for the Women's World Cup. I've got my pink headband ready for tomorrow. Justin is a big fan of the Women's National Team. What are your thoughts going into this first match against Australia?
I kind of feel like I'm put in a weird spot as a U.S. as a U.S. Women's National Team fan. Because I think Hope Solo is the best goalkeeper in the world in the women's game.
Yeah.
I want her to play. But, like, now there's this thing that's hanging out there. So I'm conflicted. Yeah. I think the story is kind of... I don't know. I don't know how much to get into this. I think the story is a little bit more broad than what just domestic violence or just women's soccer. I think this sport in the United States has sort of taken on I would call it almost a dark edge, and that's this reliance upon alcoholism for soccer. I don't like it. I think it manifests itself in some very unfortunate ways, and this is one of them.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, we're all guilty of it, but it's real.
Yeah.
And I see it every day. Every day, we, being a soccer fan in this city, it's getting worse. Mm-hmm. And in this country, it's getting worse. And we kind of gloss over it because it's how a lot of people get paid.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I just read the ESPN article, so it's standing out in my mind.
Mm-hmm. I've not read the ESPN article yet at this point. So, I mean, for those who haven't, do you want to do kind of bullet point it?
Well, it's interesting. It goes into details about one side of the story.
Mm-hmm.
But it's also the official side of the story because it's what the Kirkland police are reporting.
Yeah.
And it's clear that something that we've all known about Hope Solo is that she's an alcoholic.
Mm-hmm.
That's something we've known even before all this happened. She had a very rough life. Her father was not, I'd say he was probably an alcoholic at best.
Mm-hmm.
This is a family, an inter-family thing that happened.
Yeah.
And its roots are in alcoholism.
Mm-hmm.
When she was pulled over a few months ago with her husband, who's probably barely hanging on to sobriety, I would say,
mm-hmm. and
for the most part in his life, she was suspended for 30 days for driving a United States soccer vehicle while drunk. It's not acceptable.
Yeah.
And the solution was to suspend her for 30 days. Who knows if she went to treatment? Who knows? The fact that this is coming out now and people are being asked to say that they understand the situation.
Mm-hmm.
No one understands the situation. I heard someone when we were watching the press conference say that there's no gray area in this. Well, no, there is. There's a lot of gray area. We have it. There's no right and wrong in this.
Mm-hmm.
And this is what happens when people are intoxicated. We see it at crew games. We saw it last night at a crew game.
Mm-hmm.
You can't control it. And it's something that this culture, we've said it, I think Alex and I, we talked about it last year on the podcast, we don't have a fan culture in this sport in the United States as much as we have a beer culture.
Yeah.
And it's, like I said at the beginning, it's not getting better, it's getting worse.
Is it, I mean, I know we're talking about it in the vein of soccer, because it's, you know, because it's a soccer podcast, but is it a strictly an MLS thing or a United States thing or strictly a soccer thing, or is this an American thing?
I think it's a really good question.
I was going to say that right when you started talking, that maybe this is just soccer catching to the rest of the you know, the sports.
Yeah.
If you think of what happens across, you know, across campus every Saturday, mm-hmm. at Ohio yeah. State has a home football game.
Yep.
I'm not defending it.
I agree with it 100%.
Yeah.
I also think, though, that in this is something that you see in this sport.
Mm-hmm.
And it is the Europeanization, the European mess, I guess, quality.
Influence?
Of the sport is that look at what we do. Like, look at the Columbus Crew. We have an official beer now.
Mm-hmm.
We have an official supporters beer, possibly, coming down the pike.
Mm-hmm.
We have this reliance upon how are you going to market to quote-unquote millennials? Will you grasp the craft beer craze?
Yeah.
You can't walk a block in the city without stumbling over a new craft brewery.
Mm-hmm.
It is a fad.
Huh.
And it is a fad that the sport that is sort of, let's say, coalescing around that millennial consumerism in this country. No sport is doing it better than soccer right now.
True story.
And MLS is jumping on it. One of the things that we see that's notable is what's the official beer of MLS? What's the official beer of each one of the teams? How are local breweries and larger breweries grabbing a hold of soccer? Now look, it's something that happens in NFL. We see you go to an NFL game and people are obliterated in tailgates.
Yeah.
Tailgating is part of American culture, American sports culture that I don't think exists around the world.
Yeah.
But if you combine those two things, it's like, hey, not only go out and just get annihilated 2 hours before a game, before you go in, and then support your team, but do it in a craft beer. That's why, you know, one of the things that I've said recently is forget about craft brewing. How about craft alcoholism? Because mm-hmm. that's what MLS is, grabbing a hold of.
That's essentially what the craft brew culture is, though. It's taking mm-hmm. alcoholism and making it a refined hobby.
Right. Yeah, that's a really good point.
I mean, it's yeah. it's glamorizing it. It
yeah,
really,
I'm not a drunk,
it really
I'm
is.
I don't know if that.
The Ale Trail now, where you literally go around with a passport looking book.
Right.
You go to different craft breweries.
Right.
And look,
I'm completely aware. And this is by the way, this is all my opinion. Okay. Yeah. This is Justin Bell's opinion. I am completely aware that the major sponsor of this podcast is Land Grant Brewery.
Yes.
I am completely aware of that. I have met the guys those last week who run that place. They seem like fine, upstanding gentlemen who are doing their jobs as best as they can, and they have created a very lovely establishment. And again, I don't drink. Mm-hmm. I've been sober, completely sober, since this past January, since my birthday in January. One of the things I told myself was mm-hmm. that I was going to go through a crew season, hopefully longer, having not had a drink of alcohol.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you, and some people are probably not going to like this, it is miserable.
Mm-hmm.
And it has nothing to do with the fact that I am craving alcohol. It has everything to do with the fact that the people that I care about, that I hang out with, that I go to games with, are almost to a man and a woman drinking.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
A lot of them can handle it very, very well. And I get
Thank
along.
Thank you.
Like, people with this podcast included. I handle it very well. And
I'm sorry I tried to make out with you 2 weeks ago, Justin. I really thought you were Molly.
For the most part. But for the most part, they do very well. And that makes it, one of the reasons why I love this sport, this team, this soccer, is because of the people.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
I love you guys. I love the fans who I hang out with. You're my friends. And all, you know, all that. You all know this. But one of the things that makes it miserable is the fact that there are so many people who I know cannot handle it. And it's amateur hour out there on almost every weekend, and it's not getting any better.
Well,
we saw the manifestation of that yesterday when the crew scored their goal, and a handful of people, and has brought back some pretty bad memories for me because it was in the same exact section two years ago when I just about told this entire culture to go fuck itself because of the drunkenness that happens in the Nordeca. It is ugly sometimes.
Yeah.
And last night was a manifestation. I think probably talk about that.
Well, it was one of those things. I was looking. It was the exact same thing. It was people just obliterated out of their mind in the far end of. And I'm just citing two examples here. I'm not saying that this is it. I'm not saying that these are the only problems. But in the far ends of 101 and the far ends of 139, sitting there in the front row, not participating, not doing anything. Front, second, third, fourth, fifth row, not doing anything. And then you have people in the front of 139 who decided that it'd be a great idea just to destroy private property.
Right.
But it's not just them. It was in HSH as well, unfortunately.
Those are the two things, the two spots that I noticed personally.
I noticed it a lot in HSH this last game. Unfortunately, we had somebody in the front row of HSH who was so drunk that people brought them there so that they could keep an eye on them because they were worried they were going to pass out or fall over and hurt themselves if they were anywhere else. We had somebody break their nose further up in the section because they mm-hmm. fell over and hit their head on something and broke their nose. We had people who were bragging about drinking since 7 a.m. before the game, and it was a 7:30 p.m. kickoff game. And they were bragging about it, and other people were happy about that, whereas I think, unfortunately, this is speaking just my opinion on crew culture. I mean, I know Justin and I see eye to eye on this for the most part, but there's an attitude that's been developing over the last, I don't know how many years, but it's getting worse, I think, and it's this attitude that, if you're so drunk that you cannot support your team, people view it as something that's cute or funny or something like that, and it's accepted behavior, whereas I think as a group, and this is me included, I think I need to be more vocal about it. People need to say, you're too drunk. You know, you cannot support your team right now. You are either, you know, sitting down because you can't stand up. You're not cheering. You're just kind of sitting there and doing nothing. You're distracting other people because you've hurt yourself. You know, if five people have to turn around and see if you're okay because you just fell over, mm-hmm. that you're taking not only yourself out of the supporting of the team, but you're also taking five other people out of supporting the team. You're hurting the team by doing that. Mm-hmm. You are literally making this section less noisy than if you would have stayed at home or passed out in the parking lot.
And just to further add to that, and this kind of brings in a bit of an outsider's perspective, because I didn't grow up with tailgating culture mm-hmm. here in the States. Look, beer and sports and drinking and sports in general have always gone together. Mm-hmm. On both sides of the Pacific. I've been to countless cricket, rugby, Aussie rules, soccer games.
That's the only reason cricket was invented, right?
Pretty much.
Okay.
Test match cricket, to be serious about this, test match cricket is a five-day event. It starts at 10 o'clock in the morning. I'm being deadly serious about this. It starts at 10 o'clock in the morning, and it will go through until 6 o'clock at night. And it's really just an excuse to day drink for best part of a week.
Lots of bodily functions that happen.
There are breaks that occur during the game. Nobody camps out at the stadium. I mean, you get 5 day passes and you go home and then you go back to the stadium.
That's what I tell Molly I'm doing when I'm here five nights in a row, is just watching test match cricket.
You're watching test cricket.
Yeah,
right.
But
in all seriousness, the drinking and the sports has always gone together. And
yeah.
And I've been drunk at cricket games, and I've been surrounded by people who are drunk. But people who get to this point at Australian sporting events are usually not going to last an hour before they either pass out and are removed from the stadium, or they cause a ruckus and they get removed anyway.
Mm-hmm.
They're not propped up like mascots the way that they are here in not every sport and not every city, but some. And we talked about this last week, and Alex, you touched on this about the supporter culture. Justin, you talked about it too, the beer culture, the soccer supporter culture where the loudest and the rowdiest and the most violent and the most obnoxious are not the ones that are getting escorted out of the stadium by security. They're the ones that are getting on TV.
Mm-hmm.
And they're the ones that are propped up as, these guys are the faces of our sport and our league and our team and our city and our organization. And it's not good. It's not fine.
Well, I want to add something else. You know, I think the way Nordeca works basically is every year 10% of the people will kind of fall out of supporting the team or whatever, and a bunch of new people will come and start supporting the team. You know, people we've never seen before will show up, they'll become fans, and over a year or two we'll kind of get, absorbed into this little family that we have. And when they are first showing up, a lot of the people don't know how a supporter acts. And I see this every year. You see new people, and it takes them a couple of months, but they kind of figure out what a supporter is or what a Nordeca, supporter is. And it's kind of like a monkey see, monkey do kind of thing.
Yep.
And unfortunately what's happened, I feel like, over the last couple of years is what the monkey see, monkey do thing has been, is you get to the stadium 3 or 4 hours early, you drink yourself stupid, you go in the stadium if you still can, and you party basically in Nordeca.
Yeah.
And you do whatever you want, and if that's supporting your team, great. If that's tell everybody how drunk you are and laugh about it, that's great too. But it needs to start, and I'm gonna start doing it too. I've been thinking about this the last couple of days, because Justin touched on this earlier. We had one of our banners was damaged at the game by drunk people who decided to rip it completely off of the rail that it was attached to.
Wave it around in the air like,
and wave it around, yeah, like,
yeah.
like one of those pullovers that we do for Tifo Sweat.
Yeah.
And at the time I was really furious about it, because I've been hanging those banners since at least 2010. Every week my brother and I go in there, put everything up. Used to be with Rick and the Stroop brothers. Now it's just the Stroop brothers and my brother and myself, and we usually will get help. I can't remember a time where somebody has intentionally ripped one off like that. It might have happened. I can't remember.
It's unheard of.
I can't remember it happening. But
inside joke.
Nobody.
Come here to play art class, Justin.
We'll talk about that in a second.
Nobody had seen those people before.
Yeah.
But the people who were drunk in the HSH section, the people who were drunk in Crew Union, the people who are drunk in those sections, we see every single week. And every single week, we see them at the next tailgate, and we say, hey, how are you doing? And they're already drinking 3 or 4 hours ahead of time, and nobody says anything.
It's a train wreck.
We are supportive by not saying anything about their behavior. We are, to a certain degree, accepting it as if it's okay. And I know for me, you know, when I saw that banner in the last, 24 hours or whatever, I've had it. You know, if I see somebody and they're already drunk in the parking lot, I'm just going to walk up to them and be like, hey, you know, you should really stop drinking. Because they have to be really...
Good luck with that.
I know.
Nice knowing you, Al. Yeah.
I know. But I'm gonna try.
Next week on the Massive Report, a special memorial service for Al.
I think there's a way...
I probably won't phrase it like that, but...
I think there's a way to handle it where you're not... I don't want to sound like a nag, right? Because I'm not. I feel like you need to handle your own business. But what we don't want to do is support that. And when, Greg, you were talking just now, you said something that really, I think, was very smart. And it made me think about the fact that those people who go to the games and are drinking beer after beer after beer, or who are going and, tweeting about what beers they're having while watching a Crew game, or what beers they're having when they're in the parking lot, whatever. I think that those people are almost looked at by the teams in MLS and the league as being more valuable to soccer.
Yep.
Than someone like myself, or someone who just shows up and has one beer, or someone who just knows when they've had enough and stops.
Yeah.
Because at that point, they're not a reliable consumer anymore. And what we see over and over in this league is this is why the millennial generation is favored, because I have a lot of hope for them that they're going to get their stuff ready, and they're going to figure out how to do this in a way that doesn't allow them to be bought and sold every time they turn around. But that is a generation of people that is very much focused on consumption.
Oh, yeah.
And what are you drinking? Because you're going to post it on Twitter.
Crispin, thanks for asking.
Yeah. What are you... Yeah. What are you wearing? Who are you? What new corporate entity are you supporting today? These are all essentially part of that generation and who this league wants to be a part of. They want to be that fan culture. They want the fans, supporters groups to be made up of those people.
Of course.
It's one of the things that Morgan and you, everybody here was talking about last week. And look, I'm going to wrap this up, I promise. Last week after the Orlando City game, I got into a bit of an argument on Facebook, on the social media, on Twitter, with several Orlando City fans.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that I was joking about was the fact that the Crew players have heart, and what Orlando City has is a flag with a heart on it that says beer. That is not an accident.
Yeah.
That flag exists, that it's painted by quote-unquote supporters, and that it is promoted relentlessly by Orlando City Soccer Club and Major League Soccer. That is the symbol of Orlando City. It is not that badge, that horrible Lion King badge that they paid some crappy artist to make.
They probably get it on
Fiverr. It is the symbol of that heart with beer on it.
Yeah.
That is what represents Orlando City Soccer. Soccer in Florida, and if it was up to MLS, that would be the representation of soccer in this country.
It would be a heart, and it would say, insert your local craft brewery here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Craft
beer.
Or your craft beer.
But then, then Heineken would.
Or your favorite liquor.
Millions of dollars. So.
Yeah.
I think they would either way, but I can't
wait for the official craft distillery of the Columbus Crew SC.
That official thing is such an American thing, and it's one of the other things that I find hard to get my head around.
Talk about
the official beer, the official.
Crap, because I went to when I was in England, every single EPL or championship side that I went to had an official meat pie. So screw you and your
snobbery. I've never scarfed down four meat pies and not been able to find my way into the cricket ground.
Yeah.
Okay.
It depends on where you're getting your meat pies from and how long they've been sitting out.
Well, that's very true.
Food poisoning.
I usually keep a very careful watch over my meat pies and where they come from. But
go ahead.
I know I was ranting about this earlier, but I think it bears repeating. If you are so intoxicated that other people have to help you, you are hurting the section that you claim to support. You are taking people out of supporting the
team.
But
see, here we go. This goes back to what we're talking about with Hope Solo.
It's better to stay home.
This whole conversation just happened. If you just watch this press conference where the question was, is Hope Solo going to be suspended for the World Cup? Now, Hope Solo, again, is the best goalkeeper in the women's game. And yet, we're going back to this question. Is she going to be able to play or not? Now, did Hope Solo go out that night, get drunk, drink, show up at her sister's house and get into a fight because she was planning on it? No, she wasn't. She did it because she's an alcoholic. I mean, there's aspects of alcoholism and sobriety that I am completely unqualified to talk about. But one thing I do recognize is that people don't plan on doing things like showing up at a soccer game and passing out. They're not capable of saying, wow, I've had enough. Holy crap, I'm going to pass out. I should stop. I mean, these are aspects of that disease, that disorder, that much smarter people than I or any of us have studied and tried to solve. And it's, you wish that people in those situations would be like, I've had way too much to drink and I'm going to cause a problem here in the corner, that they would be able to recognize that. But they just can't. A lot of them just can't.
I think one thing we can do, the people who have been around a while, is if we set a standard of, we're going to not drink to the point where we can't kind of control ourselves. If we all set that example, the people who kind of come in and do the monkey see, monkey do thing will hopefully follow that. And over years or whatever, we can kind of change this thing. I really feel like we need to get back to the primary reason that we are there is to cheer until we have no voice left for Columbus Crew SC, and to give everything we got for those guys every single game, because we expect them to go out and give everything they have for us. So,
well, let's do this. Let's put a pin in this for now. We'll come back and we'll actually talk about the Women's World Cup and the group matches. This is a good conversation. We'll come back. We'll talk about the Women's World Cup group matches here in a few minutes. One suggestion that I have before we go to break is we are also officially sponsored by Schmidt Sausage House. And what I think is they should just set up an Autobahn at every single tailgate, and then people will just eat way too much German potato salad and bratwurst and Bahama Mamas, and they won't be able to get drunk because they've had so much food that we just solved the problem, and I get free German food
just
for every tailgate.
Just have a jumbo cream puff, it's
those,
way
those
better.
Bahama Mamas will soak up a lot of liquor.
That's why it's Germans worth, eat them.
It's worth that,
I'm just saying.
Tossing that out there.
Just an idea. All right, we're going to be back in a couple minutes. Greg's going to talk about his stuff, and then we're going to go from there. Hey, guess what? We went an entire two segments of a podcast without talking about Magic Poopies for the Philly game.
Wait, it's the Master Report.
Episode 42 of Cards Against Insanity coming at you right now, and appropriately, Crew SC are searching for answers to life, the universe, and just about anything. Well, that's not what I'm here for. I just flip through the sports pages, find some funny stuff, and try to make it slightly funnier. Cards Against Insanity is sponsored this week by only having the second worst game of the weekend. Seriously, if you missed Ireland v. England today, you are one of the lucky ones. But that could just be karmic justice for tonight's red card. Opinions are mine and don't necessarily reflect those of the Massive Report or Columbus Crew SC. Keep using the MR Cards hashtag. However, to everyone who reported the Orlando City fans being jackwads this week with regards to talking about how the Crew never got promoted from a lower division or using the R word in their chants, I'm over it. They're awful, we know they're awful, and they have to get a lot worse to surprise me anymore. But not these guys. Yellow card to Svein Oddvar Moen. He's a Norwegian referee who worked last week's Tippeligaen match between Strømsgodset and Lillestrøm. Their referees have a hard job. They're expected to see what's going on with 22 players simultaneously and not miss a single call. They often have to be just as fit as the players, but you would think that a simple coin toss before the match, what could possibly go wrong? Well, Moen managed to bean one of the players in the head with a coin, that's what. Coin goes up, Coin comes down. Coin lands on head of Strom's godset, Captain Espen Pettersson. Fortunately, Pettersson wasn't hurt because, you know, it's a coin. And Strom's godset went on to win 2-0. Incidentally, that's exactly how MLS decides where a designated player is going to go. They just line up all the owners. Garber tosses a coin. It's the sorting hat of American soccer. Yellow card to Caleb Sturgis of the Miami Dolphins. He will miss the remainder of organized team activities in preparation for the upcoming NFL season due to a leg injury sustained in a kickball match. Now, those of you unfamiliar with individual NFL players will say to yourselves, surely he's got to be one of a linebacker or one of those 300-pound defensive linemen. I could see those guys getting hurt playing kickball. Nope. Sturgis is the Dolphins' kicker. It is his job to kick a ball. And he got hurt playing kickball. It would be like if Aaron Rodgers was working a cash register, someone gave him a dollar, and he got hurt trying to give them a quarterback. Yellow card to Rochelle Graham, the... Yellow card to Rochelle Graham, the girlfriend, or I suppose ex-girlfriend now, of Newcastle United striker Papiss Cisse. Graham kissed her boyfriend goodbye as he took off for a summer vacation, and when he didn't respond to text messages after a couple days, she went onto Facebook to discover that he'd been busy getting married. What a papisser. Cisse married Senegalese volleyball player Diallo Awa in Paris, but the story goes deeper. Apparently Cisse had two girlfriends back in the UK before the evidently arranged nuptials. Now, between Cisse and teammate Cheick Tiote, who I carded last September for taking two wives and then upsetting a mistress in the process, can we just rename Newcastle United the Players Club and be done with it? Yellow card to Cardale Jones, who made an undisputed national ass of himself during Game 1 of the NBA Finals on Thursday night. The Ohio State quarterback and diehard Cleveland Cavaliers fan apparently had some problems with female Golden State Warriors fans during the game, and he took to Twitter to voice his displeasure with predictable results. Quote, chicks kill me, so-called having a favor, should be favorite, sports team. 98.99% of females like teams because of their colors, end quote. 2 minutes later, quote, I hope the yellow and blue team win because my sister, baby, father, uncle, cousin wore yellow and blue to prom, face ass, end quote, whatever that means. And then finally, quote, don't get me wrong, nothing like a female who know her sports, end quote. Can we accept that don't get me wrong is the new I'm not sexist, but? I mean, now this on its own is bad enough, but then he had to use the oldest and least believable excuse in his book after deleting his tweets. Quote, I need to change my Twitter password. End quote. Yeah, you totally got hacked. Or someone else needs to change the password so you can't use it again. Apparently you ain't come here to play social media. I'd love to see what any of the U.S. women's national team players would have to say about these tweets, but right now they're busy in Canada, you know, knowing their sports. Idiot. Yellow card to hotel security in Berlin, specifically the hotel being used by Juventus as they prepared for yesterday's UEFA Champions League final against Barcelona. After an imposter managed to talk his way into the hotel dressed as and looking remarkably like Juventus goalkeeper Gianluigi Buffon. Yes, the lookalike was dressed in a full Juventus goalkeeper kit and stadium jacket, and possessing similar dark hair, long stature, and facial features to the former World Cup winner, and that was good enough for security, who let him in without ID literally moments before the Juventus team and the real Gigi Buffon turned up and presumably met his doppelganger in the lobby. Juventus fans, you can't use that as an excuse for losing yesterday. 99% sure that was the real Buffon out there. And finally, red card to the Football Association of Ireland and its chief executive, John Delaney, who revealed this week that FIFA paid them off not to protest the result of a World Cup qualifier between Ireland and France in 2009. On Friday, the FAI published the full contract, previously kept secret, that saw them accept 5 million euros, roughly 5.5 million US dollars, from FIFA in exchange for ending protests about the controversial result that saw a Thierry Henry handball go uncalled in the lead-up to France's winning goal that allowed them to qualify for the already tainted 2010 World Cup, and Ireland missed out. Then FIFA president Sepp Blatter joked just days after the game that he would consider Ireland's request to be the 33rd team at the World Cup. This, in the eyes of the FAI, was a breach of contract, and they released the whole thing. So why are they at fault here? Simple. They took the money. The FAI decided that the integrity of Irish football was worth $5.5 million, and they took the money and ran rather than try to fight the monster that is FIFA in the courts and potentially have the game replayed and maybe make the 2010 World Cup, where they would have received $8 million US just for being there. And one of the most fascinating things about the ongoing FIFA corruption scandal is just how deep this thing runs. just how many people from so many different federations and associations are involved, and how much of the past two decades of international football history could have and may very well have been tainted by backroom deals. Take, for example, the 2002 World Cup in Korea and Japan. We all remember how Cinderella South Korea punched above their weight and made it all the way to the semifinals, and needing some questionable refereeing decisions in their round of 16 and quarterfinal matches to help them along in that process. And wasn't it fascinating how all of South Korea's games happened to be in South Korea and not in co-host nation Japan due to different group stage results placing them in a different half of the bracket? Almost like they planned it that way. Now let's look at their opponents that they beat in those round of 16 quarterfinal matches, Italy and Spain, who just so happened to go on and win the next two World Cups. I don't want to sound like a Fox News anchor here, but after everything else we've learned about the mutual back-scratching going on at so many levels of football, it's not an inconceivable stretch to think that maybe FIFA arranged all of this so that Korea, whose fans spent millions on tickets and merchandise, could do well in a World Cup they were hosting, and in exchange for getting the shaft in that tournament, Italy and Spain were promised future success. Bearing in mind also that the World Cup before that one, held in France in 98, was won by France in a final that featured a referee from Morocco, a French-speaking country, and was such a shock defeat for Brazil that the government of that country launched an investigation of their own. The Guardian suggested in 2002 that Brazil might have been offered a bribe of $23 million to throw the 98 World Cup final in exchange for future success. Sure enough, Brazil won it 4 years later, and just 5 years after that, they were awarded the right to host the 2014 World Cup. I need to stop here for two reasons. One, because this could occupy an entire podcast on its own. And two, because it's kind of depressing. I don't want to think that the last four World Cups have been hosted and won by countries that did so thanks to cloak and dagger stuff behind the scenes. Unfortunately, this ongoing investigation is going to reveal new details practically every day, and we might not have a choice. Because if we already know that Ireland took a payout, it's just a matter of who else, how much, and what for. My name is Greg Benson. You can find me on Twitter as GregGulator614. And if you're at Hendox Pub, you're in my seat. A reminder once again to use the hashtag MRCards if you've got something I should be including on next week's show. Until then, play on, but remember, I'm watching you.
And we're back. Segment three of the Massive Report. Previewing, apparently, a small child kicking a ball. Oh, it's Noah Padula, who is very, very good at kicking a ball. Yes, I was over at Gino's house the other day. Justin, I think I already told you about this. And Gino was showing off Noah, who's, what, was he one at this point?
Yes.
Yeah, he's like 1 year old.
He's like 14 months old.
14 months old.
No, he's 18 months old.
The kid's got a hell of a left foot, first of all, for being one. But second of all, Gino's, my favorite thing that Gino said was, he's already better than Andy Iroh.
I was about to say something similar. Can we swap him out for Tyson Wall? But okay.
Oh, God.
So we're talking about the Women's World Cup here, real quick. Obviously, you know, the U.S. have a game tomorrow against Australia. Greg and I will be sitting next to each other and cursing at each other for the entire match.
Most likely.
Yeah. Germany, by the way. The game was ended early due to the 10-run rule. 10-0 against the Ivory Coast. So it's already been an interesting beginning to the Women's World Cup here. U.S. have three matches coming up in group stage. Tomorrow against Australia, on the 12th against Sweden, and on the 16th against Nigeria. Other than that Sweden match, and I'm sorry to say this, Greg, but the men's team had the group of death. The women's team have the group of meh.
I disagree.
All right.
I think this is a harder group than it's being painted as.
All right. Your thoughts. Go ahead.
My thoughts are that, I mean, obviously I'm going to be a little bit of a homer for Australia.
Well,
but
you're
allowed
to be.
They do have an incredibly good women's team.
Mm-hmm.
They are consistently one of the top 10 in the world. Mm-hmm. And I think they will give the U.S. some headaches. I don't know if they're going to win. There's a small part of me that was hanging out for this press conference before the second segment, thinking, oh, God, is this going to be something that's totally going to make the U.S. team fall apart so that Australia can capitalize? I don't think that's going to happen, though.
Yeah.
I think it's going to be a good game, though. Nigeria, I don't know. I honestly don't know too much about them, but I do know Sweden have a very good team, too.
They do.
I wouldn't
they
call
do.
This a group of death. I'd call it a very, very solid group, though. It's
okay.
Going to be one that the U.S. is going to have to play their ass off to come out of on top. And
Morgan, yeah. Your thoughts? You got the U.S. jersey on.
Yep.
Yep.
It's going to be great.
Did you guys know that America is playing Australia?
Yeah.
Australia is a city in New England. It's a Chinese fishing colony, I think.
Yeah, that's true. Those are true stories. Alex.
I'm really looking forward to the tournament. I think we have a very solid team. There are a couple of question marks, one being Hope Solo, which we've already touched on. What kind of mental state is she in, given the fact that all this stuff came out? Is she in the right frame of mind to play? If she is, I'm assuming she's going to start, but if she has a bad tournament, I think we could be in trouble. There's also a little bit of a question around Abby Wambach, who is, you know, one of the best women's players of all time, but she's had a little bit of difficulty in Ellis's system. Jill Ellis is the coach of the team.
Yeah.
She hasn't really quite got things to work with her. A lot of women's national team fans are kind of, I don't know if fed up is the right word, but they're not really thrilled with how she's been performing recently. I think it'd be possible. I think we're going to be leaning a lot on players like Kristen Press and Sydney LaRue, especially Sydney LaRue early on, because Alex Morgan is not fully fit. She's still recovering from a knee injury.
Mm-hmm.
One player to watch that a lot of people might not have heard of would be Morgan Bryan, who's a central midfielder, pretty young, just graduated from Virginia, I believe, 2 years ago.
Wait, what was her first name again?
Morgan.
Uh-huh.
Morgan Bryan.
And which national team did she play for?
I see where you're going with this. U.S. women's national team.
Oh, okay. Yeah, because it's a girls' team. Okay, cool. Yeah. Continue.
This is all very hilarious.
And her last name is a boys' name, so it's kind of complicated.
It's different from Alex Morgan.
Yeah,
it's the other way around.
I'm looking across the table at Alex Morgan right now.
Yeah, no, true story.
Alex Morgan. Yeah, because we sit next to each other. I didn't notice that. That is true.
I'm sitting across the table from Butthole and Crap Mouth.
I like this.
That person doesn't play for the national team.
This is going well.
Well, that's just because Donovan retired.
Back to you, Crap.
Oh,
oh
my God,
you
are going to get so annihilated on Twitter. You don't know those people. The Landonites are.
Oh no, they're awful.
Oh please, we need the hits.
So U.S. Soccer Capo is still angry about it. He is still.
Have you ever seen the movie Wicker Man? the women in Wicker Man, those are all Landon Donovan fans.
Legend.
I like Landon Donovan.
All right.
But anyway, I think if Hope Solo is in the right frame of mind, I think we can.
Morgan, you need to tweet about this right now. Go ahead. Go ahead, Alex.
By that, you mean sober.
Think she has to be in the competitive frame of mind. If she is in the right frame of mind, I think we have a good chance of winning the tournament. I think Canada are pretty strong, but they still have a little bit of issues. They are really relying on Sinclair.
Greg, for your information, Japan. Australia is 40-1 odds. To win 40-1, Greg.
Those odds.
What are the odds on Japan? I'm curious.
Japan is 9-1.
9-1.
Just go down like the top like five or six teams.
Germany and United States are tied 3-1 odds. Next down would be France 11-2. Brazil follows at 8-1. Canada at 9-1. Japan also at 9-1. Sweden at 14-1, and then England and Norway both at 25-1.
Right.
Who's last on that list? Where's Ivory Coast?
Ivory Coast is 2,500-1, and they are last.
Which after losing 10-0 to Germany today, it's over 9,000.
I do want to. Before I get Justin's opinions on this, I do want to bring up one quick thing. So these are the results that we've had so far. We had yesterday: Canada beats China 1-0. Netherlands beats New Zealand. Sorry, Duncan, 1-0. Norway beats,
no sympathy.
And then today,
No. Say it. Norway what?
Norway beats Thailand.
What was the score?
4-0.
Yeah.
No, I was just saying.
I'm very confused.
Today was a goal fest because 4-0 in the Norway Thailand game, and then 10-0 in Germany Ivory Coast.
I just want to point out too that the Norwegian soccer team got screwed because their kit maker, who I won't say their name, made men's shirts for them. Made them play in men's
uniforms. They're baggy as hell. And is my assumption.
And they also made them look exactly like 3-year-old U.S. national team third kids.
Yeah. Yeah. Go ahead, Alex.
One team to watch, not just in this tournament, but keep an eye on going forward for all the tournaments from now on, is France. They're not the favorites to win this thing, but they recently started training the women at the Clairefontaine Academy in France, which is considered one of the best academies in the world. That's where the French national
team... As opposed to where they were training the women's team beforehand, which was an abandoned metro station underneath Paris.
Well, what they've done is they've brought the two teams... They've brought the two teams together to train with the same kind of system and the same kind of... They're going through it with the fine-tooth comb that they go through with the men, which in Europe is something that previously they haven't done. They hadn't really invested in national team academies, bringing kids in at a young age and kind of bringing them through. That was a thing that they would do with the men's, but not with the women.
Yeah.
France are really getting behind that now, and Germany are always dangerous, and they have... Their goalkeeper is probably even better than Hope Solo, so they're a team to definitely be afraid of as well.
Justin, final word. Give me your entire thought, everything you've got to think about or you're thinking about right now about the Women's World Cup.
Well, a couple things. I think the U.S. is still the favorite. Mm-hmm. However, they've got some big hurdles. One of them is the fact that their most recent ex-coach, Tom Cermani, is now an assistant for Canada. There's a lot of... There's a big rivalry there. They're not in the same group, of course, but they will probably match up in the knockout stages. It's going to be incredible.
USA-Canada would be amazing.
Yeah, they have history going back to last, the Olympics. They have a long, long history.
Yeah.
And it's not a pleasant history. The other fact is that in the group that the U.S. is in, the head coach of Sweden is Pia Sundhage, who's the greatest coach in our history. And so this gives them a bit of an advantage. She knows this team inside and out.
Yeah.
And so Sweden, don't sleep on them. They could actually win this group.
Yeah.
The U.S. is in a weird spot. We have an aging team. This might be it. Mm-hmm. But that's sort of the conventional wisdom. But I think this team... I think there's a lot of talent that's going to last. It's just, are those players going to step up and lead? Carly Lloyd, for instance, captain, she's 32 years old.
Mm-hmm.
She's not young, but she's not old. So she's kind of in this mid-range. Abby Wambach is probably it for her.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of players who are on their way out. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of a transitional year, I guess would be the best way to say it.
I think... go ahead.
No, that's...
Is Michelle Akers still on the team?
No.
All right.
I don't think so.
She's like 100. That's all.
Well, I mean, Christy Rampone is still on the team. She's 40, I think.
Damn. 39,
40. Mm-hmm. I mean, so they've got some... But
that goes old, man. All right, back to you, Justin.
The only other thing I can think of...
I know a lot about women's soccer.
...that's going to be important is how is the turf going to play.
Oh, God.
I mean, I haven't even mentioned that. I mean, that is... That is going to be, you know, the fact that the U.S. has kind of started this cleaning house of the FIFA overlords.
This is going to be the remnants of that still.
They negotiated this deal to have Canada play the Canadian World Cup, the artificial turf. And the U.S. team is not happy about it, obviously. They have, as players, arranged a deal with Scott's Lawn, who are our favorite lawn care company.
Yeah. Right in Marysville, Ohio.
Yeah, to tweet random messages during the World Cup and in the last few weeks leading up to this, talking about how artificial turf is subpar, substandard, and how it's not fair. And that, I've never seen anything like that, where the players on a team have decided to undermine one of a corporate sponsor, I guess, of a tournament, an international tournament.
Yeah.
And they got a lot of crap for it because they said that they were selling out to a company, but, you know, there's a reason for it.
My other question is some of the games here, so we've got host cities in Montreal, Winnipeg, Vancouver, Hamilton, I think Edmonton is the other one, and then the other one that I think is interesting is Moncton, New Brunswick is one, and my question is how are they going to deal with the rampant bear attacks that happen in Moncton? I mean, that's...
Moncton, New Brunswick.
The bears are gentrifying that. They're opening Thai restaurants. Like, it's just... It's a difficult situation
there.
It's a
big problem.
I feel like that's a running joke.
It is a running
joke.
Those bears
are very disappointed that Norway beat Thailand 4-0 today.
Yeah.
You mentioned that before?
I know.
They lost a lot of business.
Why do you think we're...
a Norwegian restaurant.
We're more concerned now because they're angry.
Yeah. That's why I'm concerned about these people.
Is Brianna Scurry still on the team?
No. One thing I wanted...
It's been 17 years since... 16 years since that.
16.
Since that World Cup.
Oh, my God.
One thing I wanted to add.
Michelle Akers has a wonderful perm.
Go ahead, last thing, and then we're going to do score predictions on the World Cup.
One thing I wanted to add about the turf. I think they estimated the cost of the turf, and Justin, correct me on this if I'm wrong. I believe the estimate to add grass to all of the stadiums was between $1 and $2 million. It's really telling that they were able to scrounge up $5 million to pay Ireland to have them avoid legal action against France, but they can't find $1 to $2 for the women.
It's also grass. If you get Scott's Turf Builder to sponsor it, it's free.
Is Julie Foudy still in the team?
Although I think that was
okay.
If you get any grass company at all, if you get anybody who's a lawn and garden company to sponsor your tournament, guess what they do? They don't actually pay you money. They just build your turf for you.
As I understand it, the Scots campaign is a little bit more complex than it appears on the surface. A lot of the deals that they made where they were making the offers to put turf in, they made after the case was already kind of done and dusted.
Of course they did. It was just good social media by Scots.
It was one of those things where it was an offer that they knew would never be accepted, so they didn't really... It's not like they were really putting the $2 million out there necessarily. It was kind of...
But it's good...
They're paying the U.S. players as personal sponsors. They're getting
probably
paid.
Yeah, of course. Of course.
Is Kobe Jones still on the team?
He's a man, and no, he's not.
All right, quick, before we go into segment four, we're just going to skip Morgan, because screw that guy. Greg.
The hell you will.
U.S. versus Australia.
0-0, I hope. Because honestly, I've lived the last 11 years in the U.S. I identify with America.
We don't identify with you,
this
though.
Is my... I know you're not really kidding. This is my home. I root for the U.S. when they're playing anybody except Australia. I hated this group draw to begin with. I don't want them to play each other. I would love them to just kick the ball off and sit down for 90 minutes.
That would be a really boring game.
It would be a very boring game, but I'd be thrilled with the result.
That's like the crew on Wednesday against Philadelphia.
Except Philadelphia.
One side did
down.
That.
Yeah.
We had an agreement.
Justin, U.S. Australia.
I think the U.S. is going to win 3-0.
All right, Alex.
Sorry, Greg.
I think it's hard to make a prediction about this because of Hope Solo and Abby Wambach and what happens with those two. But if I had to guess, I would say we win 2-1.
All right, Morgan.
U.S. 3, Austria 1, Michelle Akers with all three headed golds off of her beautiful permed head. She's my favorite of all time, though. That's for real, though. That's just real. Matt, that's me being real with you. Back to you.
I'm going to say 2-0 U.S. We go into the second match before we do another show, and that's going to be USA-Sweden. Morgan, we're going to go on your side first. We're going to go around the opposite way.
What are we doing?
Score prediction, USA-Sweden.
Of course, yes. USA Cruisers FC 3, Swedish Mohammed Saeeds 1, Michelle Akers with all four goals, 3 goals for us, and an own goal all off that beautiful permed head.
Alex.
Sweden are good. I think 1-1 draw.
Yeah. Justin?
I think it's going to be a 2-2 draw.
Yeah. Greg?
3-2 U.S.
I think it's going to be a 0-0 draw.
Ah, false. It was 3-1.
3-1. Oh, that's what we were looking for. 3-1. Yeah. Sorry. Didn't realize that.
I award you no points, and may God have mercy on
you. Akers
your soul.
Is having a great tournament in
She is. Yep.
We're going to go to break. We'll come back and talk.
I would like to point out that Michelle Akers retired in, like, I think it was 2000.
It was 1999. I think it was 2001.
It was 1999, for
There's
sure.
There's one other game, by the way.
Like, she retired right what? After that World
there
Cup.
There is another game. Before we do another podcast.
Before we do another podcast.
Yeah, okay. Not before we do. These are the two this week.
Great. I wasn't sure if we were just knocking these all out.
Like, yeah, we're just not going to. Let's not talk about the women for another month. Whatever. Just knock it all out. It's not like it's the World Cup.
You had to go with a month?
Yeah.
Really?
Because that's how long the World Cup lasts, Greg. Okay. What were you thinking about, you horrible sexist bastard?
I love you, Michelle.
I'm going to be wearing my Ally Krieger shirt tomorrow.
I'm going to be wearing
I just want to say that because I'll
be wearing my Alex Morgan shirt.
Alex Morgan shirt, yeah.
I need to find a pink headband before tomorrow.
In the absence of a Matilda's jersey in my wardrobe, I'm going with the Socceroos jersey tomorrow.
Oh, and I'm buying a Morgan Bryan shirt, so nobody steal my player name. And nobody ask me if my name is Brian, and I put my own name on the back of it, please.
Oh, that's going to happen 100 times
to me
tomorrow.
I know, and it's
going to
be rude.
100 times. I took a picture of it and put it on Twitter when it came in the mail, and people are like, oh, that is so stupid.
Can't believe you got your own name.
You got your
jersey.
Own name, and it was your first name. I kicked him in the face.
Yeah.
Thanks, Justin.
I do. It does look like the printer ran out of toner
Columbus
at the top
96.
Of it.
Yeah.
Columns.
That's what I'm talking about.
Columns.
Yeah. It does look like your printer just ran out of cyan halfway up. Yeah.
I remember my first
Twitter
joke.
It's a terrible shirt. It's a terrible, it's a terrible jersey this year.
I love it. Actually, I like it.
Screw this crap. We're going to break. This is the Massive Report. It's brought to you by Land Grant. We're going to talk crew when we come back. See you in a few.
Love you, Michelle.
And we're back. It is segment number 4. It is the Massive Report. So my name is Matt Goschert. Joined by our panel, and we are brought to you by Land Grant Brewing at Hendox. One quick programming note. Obviously, we are recording on Sunday this week due to the Women's World Cup game happening tomorrow because we all kind of want to watch that game instead of doing a podcast during it. I don't even want to know what's going on over there in the corner. Thanks, Justin, for screwing me up. We will be back, though, a week from Monday. A week from Monday is the crew's 21st birthday as a franchise. And our good buddy Nate Beckman and our good buddy Chris LaMacchia, they will both be joining us for that podcast. And apparently Nate's bringing cake.
Massive Report Alumni Association.
So free cake a week from Monday if you want to come out to Hendox.
We're starting early with that.
Oh, dear God, Morgan.
Let's just get right into it.
Yeah, let's get right into it. Pogatets.
Yeah.
You know I'm happy.
Okay, so.
Feed your dog. Feed it.
I'm sure everybody knows. You gotta space it out, Morgan, so that we can at least talk about what happened. God.
Is there any.
Dad, hungry ass dog.
So,
is there a Scottish accent?
Go, Alex.
That app?
Go.
Yeah, so Pogatets posted.
Feed that dog.
On. On Facebook, after the game, and a big statement that basically said he was disappointed and a little bit upset that he has not been playing in this stretch of games. He said he was very disappointed with the result, but even more with my personal situation at the moment. Despite being fully fit, I did not start 2 out of the last 3 games. After our loss during the week against Philadelphia, our coach made it clear to us that he thinks he fielded a team not able to compete, and that he will change the lineup accordingly for the Montreal game. Obviously, I was not part of that team, and he thinks the team does better without me at the moment. He went on from there, but that last sentence kind of gets the point across. He's pissed.
As he should be. Farf, farf, angry dog, feed me. I is dad, hungry dog.
thanks for that, Morgan.
That's the translation from German to English.
I'm going to slap that out of your hands in just a second, Morgan.
I'm partially responsible for the feed the dog stuff. I was tweeting hashtag feed the dog, hashtag free Pogatets earlier. So it's,
feed that crazy, hungry ass dog.
Thanks again, Morgan. That's great.
Alex, your thoughts, though. Is it justified?
I think we don't know enough yet to say whether it's justified or not. If he was being rested in a rotation, then I think that's normal. I think one thing I worry about is I hope this is the only player this is happening to. I hope Pogatets is the only person who's upset. Pogatets is probably our most consistent defender. I personally think he's one of the best players on our team.
No.
And if he's upset, that's not good, especially given how many teams he's played for around the world and, you know, how he's a professional. He's not a kid or something like that who maybe doesn't understand how people are treated. He has a lot of experience with dealing with coaches, and if he's having a problem with Berhalter, that's not good. I know we've seen
hashtag feed that crazy hungry ass dog.
We've seen other players who have kind of had issues getting minutes. Roman Gall is one that kind of jumps to mind. And yeah, it, it's definitely concerning, and it's definitely happening at a bad time. I'm sure there's going to be a statement released tomorrow by Greg that says, oh, it was just a miscommunication. He was just being rested so that he wouldn't get tired after these three games. But I think it'll
He'd
be really...
tired for what, though? He didn't play in Philly.
Yeah.
I know.
Yeah.
It's a weird situation. For me, Pogatetz is one of the few players on our team, Kamara probably being the other one, that's basically completely undroppable. Him and Clark and Kamara should be playing every week as far as I'm concerned. Parkhurst has looked shaky at times. Chani has had the occasional off game. I can't think of a single bad performance from Pogatetz. And some of the statement kind of almost hints at, I'm not sure if Pogatetz felt like he had the Philly result pinned on him, or if he was told that he was at fault for part of that. But I don't know. It's not a good situation. So, Greg, if you're listening, just keep playing Pogatetz. Nobody wants to deal with this crap. Just feed the dog.
The dog is in need of nourishment. The dog requires foods rich in proteins and human bloods. Feed the dog your human blood. Hashtag dog blood.
Justin.
Thanks, Morgan. Wow.
Justin, should we feed the dog?
Come on, Justin, say it.
No, I wrote something on my phone. And I'll let you read it. Yeah.
This is great radio, by the way.
This is amazing radio right here.
We don't want that.
Yeah. No. Anyway, look, I think... coaches send messages to players, and players hear what they often want to hear, or not. They hear something. They hear something different.
So they went dog feeding.
That's very funny.
Yeah, I mean, I honestly, this was so kind of out of left field that I really don't even know. I don't think anyone knows what to think about it. Really, look. I like that players post things on their Facebook page, because when they're doing that so that the fans can read it, but they're also doing it so that their coaching staff can read it.
Yeah.
Manuel Pogatetz didn't just say, I'm going to post this on Facebook and no one's going to see it except for the people that I want to. No. He said it for a reason.
It's not how the internet works.
Yeah. So I think it comes from an honest place, right? It's an honest place of frustration for a player. The question is now, how does the coaching staff handle it? Now, depending on what's been going on in behind the scenes, you don't really know what to say. But I would have to say that this is something that you should expect. And you say, I like this player. I think he does a good... I add something to my team, and I'm going to play him. Or maybe he's completely... wrong for the team.
Yeah.
And if that's the case, then the coaching staff should say that. You should say, okay, well, we're moving on from this particular player because he's not fit for our program. Now, if Tyson Wall is a better option...
Undue hate.
...than Emmanuel Pogatetz, yeah, undue hate or not...
Undue hate.
I think that says something.
Uh-huh.
I think Tyson Wall, I've said this before on the show, I think he's going to be a very good coach. I get the sense that he understands things about the game. He's been around the game. I just physically don't think that he has the capacity to do what Emmanuel Pogatetz does.
He's already fed. He doesn't need to be fed anymore.
Yeah.
No.
Tyson Wall is full.
But...
The dog is hungry for dog food. Arf, arf. Hungry dog is angry dog.
I really
the
hate
dog
Morgan's
has
phone.
A thirst for both playing time and baby blood. Feed your children and your babies to the dangerous murder dog.
Damn it, Morgan.
I love your phone.
We're taking your phone away.
I love this phone. But the other thing is that this brings to mind. Amazing.
Great radio.
This is quality programming.
The thing about Greg Berhalter that I think gets kind of, I don't know if it gets overlooked or whatever, or maybe it's something that people like, is that he is straight out of Bruce Arena's program.
Right. Yeah,
he was an assistant for Bruce Arena. He played for Bruce Arena. Personally, having watched American soccer for several years, a couple decades, I'm not the biggest Bruce Arena fan.
Yeah,
I think Bruce Arena is very successful when he has players who don't need coaching.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think the worst part about Bruce Arena is when they decided to use the casino money to subsidize it and buy it from the Nationwide.
Undue hate.
Sorry. Go ahead. Continue.
But no, yeah. I think he's obviously a good coach, but he's an excellent coach when he has players who don't need coaching. When he has superstars around him who are expert, professional athletes, professional soccer players, who know how to handle their shit, who know how to live away from their families and get things done. Bruce Arena is fantastic. When he's given players who are of a lesser level than the players that he's going to be playing on other teams, he doesn't do so well.
Yeah.
And I like to point particularly to the United States men's national team when he was the coach. I think they underachieved. Now that some people will take offense to that, great offense. Some of the people who probably listen to this may have played on some of those teams.
Uh-huh.
But I think they underachieved. I think they could have been much, much better. When Jurgen Klinsmann comes in, people often say, what does Jurgen Klinsmann do that Bruce Arena or Bob Bradley didn't do? Well, that's what Jurgen Klinsmann's doing. He's trying to take those players who are not professional, who are not at that level, and make them into professional. He's better at this than Bruce Arena. May lightning not strike me for saying that Jurgen Klinsmann is better at something than
Bruce Arena.
Bruce Arena.
Yeah.
Because everyone...
It's true.
There's a quality in this U.S. soccer fandom that where that's anathema to say that. You can't say that. Mm-hmm. But I think maybe that's where Greg Berhalter is very much like Bruce Arena. Maybe he expects something from these players that some of them just don't have. But on the other hand, we see like what Greg Berhalter and Josh Wolf have done with players like Justin Merrim and like Ethan Finley. He's made them better. I don't think you can deny that. They've gotten better under this program. So I hope that they straighten this out.
Yeah.
But, Manuel Pogatetz and Hernan Grana are different types of soccer players, different types of professional athletes than Justin Merrim, than Ethan Finley. They have different experiences, and it's kind of doesn't seem to be working out very well with them.
Quick hit, Greg, your thoughts, and then let's go on to talking about the match on Saturday.
Justin, your point leads into something that I've often wondered, is that we look at Bruce Arena as the benchmark for success in MLS. Mm-hmm. He's far more successful than any other coach in this league by far. It's not even close. And it makes me wonder sometimes that with guys that come out of his system and the success that they've had, you bring in players from Europe or South America to try and fit into an MLS system, and it just seems like an entirely different animal, the likes of which there's similarities between a lot of leagues in Europe. Like, you can pretty much take a player out of Italy and put him into a team in Germany, and it will probably work, you know, or vice versa, or somebody going from Argentina to... even to England, somewhere like that. That can work. You come to MLS and it's so different. And trying to make these guys fit into a purely MLS system doesn't always work. I mean, you bring in these guys because of their pedigree, because of, you know, the fact that they're players in skilled positions that have played for national teams and that have got experience with these big European clubs. Doesn't always translate to success in MLS. And I would love to see... I'd love to know more about this story. I mean, yes, Pogatetz is definitely a great player, and we'd love to see him out there. But if he's not fitting into the system for whatever reason, maybe that's emblematic of that. Maybe it's part of a bigger problem. It's not, you know, it's not Berhalter, it's not Pogatetz, it's not Hernan Grana. It's MLS versus virtually everywhere else. Yeah. And it's I don't see it anywhere else in the world. It's weird.
Can't he just be resting him? Is that, you know,
that's possible.
And they didn't communicate it to him properly.
I think that's probably what it is.
He just didn't get it because he speaks.
I hope that's all it is.
He's a dog, and the dog needs to eat.
What's wrong, WIFU fool? Feed that dog. Feed it. Feed it all of the food you were going to give to your new family, baby. Sacrifice your new stupid baby to the dog because the dog demands it. Hashtag undue hate.
Very well said.
Thank you, Siri.
I mean, one of the things, too, kind of along those lines, is I think I think that might be a really good possibility.
Yeah,
now, look,
like
he's
90%.
Greg Berhalter is planning out the season as best as he can.
And it's not like Greg hasn't noticed that Emmanuel Pogatetz is the best defender in the league. You know,
yeah.
He's just probably resting him, and they just didn't tell him properly.
And maybe people need to start recognizing what this league is. For God's sakes, please recognize what this league is. This league is not, you know,
the greatest,
heard,
right?
There was an argument on Twitter last week about the value of Jairo Arrieta to the Crew. That the reason why this team is struggling is because we don't have Jairo Arrieta.
What?
That was one of the solutions.
No.
That we needed to have a backup for Kai Kamara, who is Jairo Arrieta. Okay, let's take the way that Jairo Arrieta played last year completely off the table. Take that out. And just recognize that Arrieta was taken in an expansion draft.
Yeah.
By Orlando City, an expansion team, which is an essential part of MLS.
Yeah.
This is something that happens in this league. So don't, you can put a lot of different, like, intents and you know, all of your theories and everything about, like, why a coach or a team is not doing well. If that team is in MLS, then you better understand how the league works. And that's one of the reasons why a player like Jairo Arrieta is not playing for the Columbus Crew, is because the Crew looked at him and said, he's a player that we can put up in the expansion draft. And, you know, they also put Aaron Schoenfeld up in the expansion draft. I mean, he was available. But why didn't Orlando City take Aaron Schoenfeld?
They didn't want to deal with his dad.
Well, that's another other guy. That's the big
guy. Yeah, it's Bedell. No, I'm sorry. Yeah.
But, like,
whoops.
That's the reason
yeah.
why they take
whoops.
Him.
Oh, well.
It's because this is the way
kids.
That the league
I don't know.
Is.
I don't know.
So, I don't know. I mean,
my whole thing is that, you know, this is, you were, to hearken back to what you were saying before, Justin, this is why I drank. This is because you kind of, yeah, you have to have some sort of escape when you're dealing with this league. And some people take it out on, you know, punching mm-hmm. babies.
Well,
some people take it out on, you know, Tony Galifo takes it out on waddling around like Oswald Cobblepot all the
Seriously?
Time. Yeah. I mean, you know, just walking up and down High Street. Go ahead, Justin. Sorry.
No, but we're going to find out more about, like, the way that this coaching staff, I think next week is going to be a big test.
It's going to be a huge test, and that's what I want to get into real quick here so we can do a quick hit on this. Columbus play the LA Galaxy. Mm-hmm. Two questions. A, what do you think is going to happen? And B, who are we going to rest for the Open Cup game?
Well, that's coming up, isn't it?
Yeah. We
Maybe
play the Richmond Ball Kickers on the 17th. Mm-hmm. But no, for real, though, LA Galaxy come to town. Mafre Stadium being expanded.
Very cool.
Yeah, more seats available. Apparently, we're building some sort of expansion over 71 in order to accommodate everybody who wants to come
nice.
Watch the Galaxy play.
That'd be awesome.
But, Justin, your thoughts on that match, and give me a score prediction.
I'm going to be real succinct. I think that the Crew have played really poorly over the last... The results have been pretty bad in the last 5 weeks, 3 or 4 weeks. Look... I think we're going to win. Probably 4-1. Because why the hell not?
Yeah.
I mean, this is the way that this league works. The Crew are going to play very well, and they're going to win. And
that's how we play the Galaxy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And there you go.
All right, Morgan.
Yep. What's up? score predictions. Yeah. Well, I heard the Tifo Sweat has been forced into action. Those girls and guys, I don't know. They're crazy, Matt. Undefeated when Tifo Sweat does their thing, so that's going to be a victory. LA hasn't been playing that well, you know. It's not like, you know, they haven't been blowing the doors off anybody. Yeah, they got smashed by Orlando National Television a couple weeks ago. They're coming into a bee's nest.
Wait, Orlando had a game on national television? That never happened.
Yeah, it's weird, right?
Yeah.
The reason they didn't score is Kaká had no penalty kicks. Columbus Cruisers FC Soccer Ballers, 4. LA Galaxy Elixians, 2. Back to you, Alex.
Greg.
Back to you, Greg.
Yeah, the game against the Galaxy last season was on the back of a very poor run of form. And it was a game that nobody in Crew fandom really expected them to get much out of. And So screw it. Why not? There's no reason they can't turn it around this year. As Morgan said, LA's vulnerable. No reason to think they can't turn this around, because every single thing that we expect of the Crew this year, they do the exact opposite. So, 2-0. All
right, Alex.
Last season, the Galaxy came to Crew Stadium and they tried to play. They really tried to play an attacking style, and they couldn't cope with us trying to play that way in Columbus. If Bruce Arena learns his lessons from last season, I think we will have a tough time winning. If they come here again, which I think they're going to do, and they're still going to try to play that
you
attacking
style. You think they're
going
to come here again?
Well, no, I think they're going to come here and try to and play that attacking style again. I don't think they're going to be able to deal with us at home. The streak has to end sometime. You know, we're going to have to get back to winning ways eventually. I think this is a good game to do that with the TIFO sweat supposedly happening. Is that public information now? Or
I don't even know who they are, but I heard it.
You've heard it? Yeah,
I've heard from some boys and some girls and some boys with girls' names that, yes, TIFO sweat is happening.
Yeah, I've heard whispers about it. But I think with the big crowd and with TIFO sweat kind of getting people riled up, I think it'll be a good atmosphere. I think the players will feed off it, and I think we'll win.
All right, fair enough. My score prediction on this Columbus Crew, let's say 7-2.
Very nice, man.
And all of those come off of Robbie Keane, either own goals or no. That's,
can we get a Galifo prediction?
Galifo.
4-0 Columbus.
Hey,
Molly. Molly says 4-2, but she's not feeling well. So. All right, guys, we're going to wrap this thing up. This has been the Massive Report. It is brought to you by Land Grant Brewing. Thank you very much to Greg, Alex, Molly hitting the buttons, Justin, Morgan, Tony, who just gets in here and just does weird stuff every once in a while. This has been the Massive Report. Next week, Monday, back on Monday, and we're doing the 21st birthday thing, so come out and join us. My name is Matt Gosher. This has been the podcast. See you, Space Cowboy.